Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you dress Ray? Does Ray wear little outfits? I'm not on board with that. It's not dignified.
I like that you warned me before I replied.
Yeah, just to let you know.
Just so you know.
But by all means, I'm not judging you if you do put your dog in a jumper.
I don't dress him except on Halloween. I put him in a special thing. But
because it's a special occasion.
This week on Walking the Dog, I went out for a stroll with actor, stand-up and all-round human wonder Kerry Godleman. Kerry has a beautiful West Highland Terrier and Scottish Terrier cross called Molly, and we took her for a run out on Streatham Common, which is Kerry's local park. You probably know Kerry best for her work with Ricky Gervais on the series Derek, and more recently in Afterlife, which returns, by the way, for a new series next year. But she's also an incredibly talented comic. Yes, Kate and William, I saw you giggling away at her during a Royal Variety performance. Kerry is incredibly genuine and open. She talked about how she's a big crier, her fast-paced kind of let's get it done approach to life, which even extended to meeting her husband, and her childhood. I love the fact that her dad is a violin maker. It's the kind of job people do in 18th century novels. We also talked about the call from Ricky Gervais that changed her life, really, and how she prepares for her stand-up gigs. And you can see Kerry's touring show Bosch in spring, summer next year. Find out more at kerrygodleman.com. I adored Kerry and Molly, and I think you will too. Enough of me, let's get on with the walk. Here's Kerry.
Get that bit of muck off your head, Molly. It's not a great look.
Oh, she's got mud on her.
Yeah. Well, it could be mud. She likes rolling in it.
Does Ray roll in dog shit?
Yeah.
That's awful. Can't stand it. Ray does a strange thing when he goes to the loo.
Yeah.
I think it's because he's quite spoiled and high maintenance.
Yes.
I know dogs do a circuit. You know, they'll go round and round in circles a bit before they do a poo. It's like he's selecting a loo. You know when like a woman goes into the toilet? So you'll be at an event or at a theatre and you pick the one you like.
Yeah.
You know, I want the one on the left.
Yeah.
No, actually I'll go on the far one. But Ray, the indecision over that drives me nuts. Like,
yes.
Come on.
You've got to not be in a hurry. It's like with a baby. You've just got to not be in a hurry. And I'm always in a hurry. So that's why I don't think I'm a dog person. I don't know how I've got one. We should talk about it.
It's a bit late now, Kerry.
Oh, I'm 6 years in. But then could be true of so many things, can't it? Where you're like, what? How did we get here?
Come on, Molly. Come on.
Come on, Mol. It's all about you now. I can take her off the lead when we get...
Oh, can you?
Well, this rookery bit is fancy, so you've got to keep them on lead. It's all kind of properly gardened and kept.
Oh,
and then if
I can
show you the posh, and then we can go back out, and then we can take the dog off the lead, and then we're in non-posh, and you will see the Croydon Basin.
We should say where we are. We're in
Streatham Common.
Yeah,
and this little bit is the rookery, and we've been in the rookery calf.
Look, the rookery. There's a sign here. It says the rookery is a small but enchanting formal garden.
Well, we'll be the decider of that, won't we? We'll judge whether it's enchanting. Don't want to be controlled by Lambeth Parks.
I think Lambeth Parks are sort of, yeah, I mean, they're tooting their own horn a bit with the enchanting.
Yeah.
But well, I do like the idea of someone sitting in an office brainstorming that and saying, shall we say, what should we say, enchanting, magical?
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. I think enchanting's pushing it. It's just a very municipal park. But yeah, what? Having said that, there is a bit down here I would go as far as to say is enchanting, which is a walled garden. In the summer, they have concerts. So you'll see there's a natural little rake.
Oh.
And they have little gigs.
Come on then. You know what I like about Molly is that she's got a very Kardashian thing going on.
Do you
with
reckon?
Her bum. She's got a good wiggle.
She looks like she's got heels on, doesn't she? She's got a little heel walk.
She looks like me in heels because I've got tiny feet. So have you, what size are you?
5.
Oh, I'm 3, you see.
Oh, gosh, yeah, tiny feet. So, did you bind them as a child?
Geisha, my geisha parents. But you, I look a bit, when I wear heels, I look a bit like a dog in heels.
I'm sure that's not true.
It's true. I haven't even said who this is, but everyone knows you, Kerry.
Do they?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it? Or maybe not. Anyway, I'm Kerry.
I'm with the wonderful Kerry Godleman, and we're in Streatham with her dog, Molly.
Molly.
Who I've just met and I've completely fallen in love with.
She's a good one, isn't she? But
so
then everyone loves their dog.
Molly.
Molly was the result of a campaign from a child. So my daughter wanted a dog. Really put the work in with regard to asking, like left notes around the house, want a dog. Every Christmas, little letters to Santa, just dog. I've got some of these notes, I kept them all. Where should we go? Because this is the rookery, which I suppose is enchanting, to quote our Lambeth Park's sign.
Do you know, I think this is beautiful.
It is lovely, isn't it?
It's like the secret garden, I love it. What so, type of dog is
she? She is a Scottie and a Westie cross. So she's a full terrier. Look at this rookery bit. See, this is nice, isn't it? This is really...
Oh, Kerry, let's describe it. It's like a colonnaded area with sort of... It's got branches growing on it. I mean, it's...
Because we're in deepest winter, I suppose it's not looking... Well, mind you,
there's a fountain here. This looks like Richard Curtis would very much put fairy lights around this and have a wedding here.
Yeah. Yes, it's wedding territory. A walled garden. And then they've got a community garden over there. It is lovely, Streatham Common.
Little cherubs on the fountain.
Cherubs, there's a...
With quite prominent genitals.
They're not that prominent, Emily, I mean. I think you're projecting onto their genitals. This is a well, which isn't like a kind of folly, it's a real well.
This is lovely.
Yeah, this well is one of 3 original wells of Streatham spa water, dating from 1659.
Look, Molly's looking... Molly, don't go down that well.
If you were sort of 13, you'd make up a story about a dead child down there, wouldn't you? That's what people... Don't you remember being a teenager and every, like, drain or hole in the ground, you're like, there's a ghost of a child down there.
I love children's urban myths.
Oh.
Our one locally in North London where I grew up was the person who'd gone at that... Don't go into that hospital because someone went in to have their leg amputated and they took off the wrong leg.
Oh, God.
And I so believe that.
Yeah, you need those stories when you're a child.
Oh, this is so pretty.
Yeah, it is. It's lovely, isn't it? It's very slippy.
To the white garden.
That isn't a race thing. It's about the plants. That would be awful, wouldn't it?
Kerry, I'm seeing you in an entirely different light.
Well, you have to have the clarity. All these plants in full bloom are white flowers. And look, white benches here.
Do you know what I like? I feel like I'm a prospective purchaser of the rookery.
Do you know what? What's funny is when we were looking around this area to move around here, we did sort of, whilst we were thinking about it, come for a walk here. And we were like you are now, like, where are we? What is this? I mean, you know what London... You grew up in London.
Yeah, yeah.
When you've lived in London all your life, you're always discovering little new bits.
I know.
It never stops.
People are always quite surprised that I grew up in London.
Yeah.
A lot of people think of it as like New York. It's a place you come to.
Yes.
You know. And the idea of growing up here, you feel a bit sort of orphan Annie. It's like,
it's
what
funny
a weirdo
though.
Growing
it's so
up in London.
Massive. You grew up North London, did you?
Yeah, north.
Yeah, I grew up west, sort of northwest. Whoosh, it's really slippy. But I've lived south longer than I ever was west now. That tipping point when you've been somewhere longer than where you grew up.
Yeah, and that's it then.
That's it. And my kids are at school around here, so I'm not going in the foreseeable.
And Molly's used to this.
Molly's manor. This is where we walk Molly every day. I must confess
that
Ben, my husband, walks her more than me. This is a bit token. I mean, like, anyone who knows me would go, who is she kidding? Pretending that she walks that dog every day.
Well, in fairness, I took Jimmy Carr out and...
On lead?
I think he had sort of patent shoes on. And I'm not sure he'd done it before because when I got the poo bags out, he was kind of like, why have you brought freezer bags?
The poo bags are a game changer for a lot of people. Like, they like the idea of a dog, but they absolutely draw the line at picking up poo.
How are you on that?
I'm just used to it now. I do have moments. Like, I went to pick one up the other day and my scarf nearly dangled in it. And I was like, that's too much, isn't it? don't really
that
want.
That puts some people off getting a dog, you know.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I don't mind it. I love my dog so much. I haven't had kids because I forgot.
Yeah, wiping up crap is something you kind of build up an immunity.
I always think people always talk about doing stuff for their kids, like to do with snot and, you know,
you do go to another place with bodily fluid.
I feel that with my dog. I love him so much.
Yeah.
I don't even mind the smell of his poo.
I do have a lot of objections to the smells that Molly offers up.
Molly! Because
this is what we will see. There'll be lots of stopping and call. But her recall is terrible with me because I am not really his master's voice. Look, there she goes. Oh my God, Molly! Don't! Just rolling in mud and crap. Molly!
Molly!
Look how awful my recall is with that dog. And I don't bring treats out. So, you know, people kind of lure them with treats. Now she's having a poo.
Oh, she's doing the poo.
I'm going to have to go and pick it up, aren't I?
Molly! Oh, yeah, let's go and get the poo. Come on. Good girl!
These poo bags are in every coat and every pocket. And sometimes you go to a do and pull out a poo bag. It's really embarrassing.
Well, I think we should... They should do poo bags that can double up as sort of evening clutches. So
when I was
happens,
a teenager, I remember taking some loose change out in a freezer sandwich bag. And my friend was like, what are you doing? I said, what? I haven't got a purse.
Molly! Did you do poo-poo?
See, I can't do that. I can't do the shrill, have you done a poo-poo? I can't. It's where I draw the line. Same with children and dogs.
Do you have a dog voice?
No. I talk to her in my own voice. This is where I don't think I'm a dog person.
You see, but you know what? Someone told me there's the difference. There's a doggy person and a dog person. And I'm a doggy person.
So might I be a dog person or
neither?
Yeah,
which is, you're just quite sort of straightforward with them. Whereas, but I think possibly your way is less nauseating. Whereas,
it's when the voice goes shrill, I just have to go. No,
I'm sorry, Kerry. Okay,
it's fine.
Well,
it's fine.
It was so lovely meeting you.
Should we part now? It's same with children, though. When people talk to their children in that voice,
you see,
I'm like, goodbye.
What's weird is I don't do it with children at all.
But it is
I hate
dogs.
It when people do it with children. I just talk to them very much like, I try and talk to them just like they're adults, quite honestly.
Yeah, which doesn't always work.
No.
So I need to find a compromise.
But dogs, I have to do that because I read as well that dogs do respond to tonality.
Oh, you see, because of a dog whistle and the pitch and all that.
So dogs understand.
Oh, now I know why she doesn't come when I call her. Because I'm going, Molly!
Molly! Come on, Molly. Good
girl.
Oh my God,
she loves you.
Good girl, Molly. Good girl. Oh, that's because I did the voice.
I feel like you're training me to be a doggy person.
Molly! Good girl, Molly. Yeah.
You're much kinder to her than I am, and you only
good
just met
girl.
Her.
Come on. I think I'm like Dr. Doolittle now.
Yes, you're teaching me to talk to the animals.
And what do you say? Fuck off.
No, I'm going to be a better dog person. I do love her. Elsie wanted her. My daughter wanted her. Campaigned hard for her. We were always like, no, because we live in London. Let's go this way.
Yeah.
We live in London. And all the usual reasons not to. And then my husband sort of went, you know what? I have always wanted a dog. And I was like, oh, well, we can have a dog. You're a grown-up.
Growing up, Kerry, were you a dog family? Did you have animals?
That's what I mean. So we didn't have... I don't think of myself as a dog person. I didn't have a dog growing up. My husband, Ben, didn't have a dog growing up. My gran and granddad did have a terrier when I was a kid, but I think that was gone by the time I was sort of 10 or 11. My mum's from Yorkshire and my granddad was a pig farmer and he's very unsentimental about animals. Like, I think there was one story where one was maybe dead and he went to bury it and my dad said, that dog's not dead, and he got it out the ground. So there's that kind of farmery.
Yes.
My granddad was like, oh, bugger it, you know, it's mainly dead. And went on. And so there's always been that kind of slightly, this is what I'm like, you see. I don't do the voices.
I see.
I think it might be in my...
It's the pig farmer gene.
Pig farmer gene.
Molly!
Good girl. Good girl. We just have to slow down. I mean, it's good for me to have a dog because it does make me slow down. You can't be in a rush with her.
Are you quite a fast-paced person?
Ridiculous. It's like the one ongoing theme is slow down. Even on my wedding day, my dad was at the other end and I was like, me and my dad were galloping down the aisle and Ben and the vicar woman were like, slow down. Slow down. I was practically...
What do you think that's about then? That's interesting.
Oh, just constantly in a rush. Slow down is my, you know, daily mantra. Like, come on, Carol, slow down.
Do you get impatient?
Yeah, awful.
So your mum's from Yorkshire.
My mum's from Goole. yeah. in Yorkshire, and my dad's from Northolt in West London, which is pretty much where I grew up.
Yeah.
I went to school in Northolt.
And what did your parents do?
My dad is a violin maker and restorer, which is weird, isn't it? It's a really unusual job.
Brilliant job.
But it's really odd how he came to be one, because he went to secondary modern school in Northolt, Northolt High, the school I went to. I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't called that, but I went there. And then he left at 15 or whatever it was, when secondary modern kids left. I went for a few job interviews for apprenticeships, and that was the one he got, to become a violin maker.
And was he particularly musical then?
Not remotely. Can't play the instrument at all. It's a pure craft. He's a kind of carpenter of sorts. A luthier, isn't it, they call them?
I love it. It's kind of like a sort of medieval job.
It's really like a medieval job, isn't it? I mean, now he doesn't make any... For years, I think he genuinely was really interested in it, and it did open up a world that he wouldn't have otherwise been exposed to. Now he's a bit over it, really. He's been doing it since he was 15, and he's 70. So, and I think he'd like to retire, really, but he can't. But
and what about your mum? Was she a homemaker? Or
she has had a lot of jobs. When I was growing up, she did all sorts.
Yeah.
From, God, literally all kinds of jobs. Always worked. A lot of my formative, like, childhood, she was a market research recruiter.
Oh, really?
So she'd be always ringing people up and going, do you like tuna fish? And then trying to get them to go on a go to a market research group discussion. I suppose since the internet, they don't really do all that anymore, do they?
Yeah, that used to be.
Do you remember that used to be a thing, like women with clipboards outside supermarkets?
Yes.
And trying to get you to go to, and you'd get 10 quid to go to a market research group discussion.
Yeah, that was a real student thing as
well.
Yeah,
and my mum used to sometimes, you know, have like double people, which you're not really meant to do. You're meant to go out and properly get them off the street.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, you'd go, look, do you want to do one on candles? There's one at Wax Lyrical on Tuesday afternoon. And they'd go, well, I did one, Linda, on tuna fish last month. And she's like, oh, I'll just wear a hat. The group discussions would be in our house, so she'd kind of hire the lounge out.
Yeah.
So often used to watch like telly upstairs in the evening because there were groups downstairs. So I wonder if that world's all just gone. And then when I was older, she trained to be an Alexander teacher.
Oh, my mum did a bit of that.
And she was completely, it was transformed her life, really.
Which we should say, just if anyone doesn't know, the Alexander technique is sort of its posture and its...
Yeah, but it's about lifestyle as well. It's kind of almost, it's like a kind of philosophy in a way. I mean, it does...
It was ahead of its time, I think, in a way.
It does, it's interesting, isn't it, about me not being a very slowed down... The whole slow down thing, because often my mum is like, slow down.
And you see,
don't tell me how to live my life.
I would say, as a therapist obsessive, is fascinated by family dynamics.
Yes.
You know, they always say that, you know, you don't realise that in subtle ways, you always have a reaction to your upbringing.
Oh, completely. What's that brilliant quote about your life being sort of dictated by the unfulfilled dreams of your parents and things like that? I mean, it's so true.
And actually, to a degree, it's almost like that's a subtle... It's almost like, well, that's a reaction, isn't it? Because you're right. If you're brought up in an environment where it's all about... But I don't know. I mean, I'm saying your mum was an Alexander teacher, but what was the atmosphere?
And she trained to be a counsellor as well.
Did she?
Around the sort of probably, what, mid-80s? She's very into therapy and all that and had a lot of that. And then really went into that world. So she trained to be a counsellor, and then not long after, Alexander technique, and just completely changed her life and became much more absorbed in that sort of self-help arena. I don't know,
did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got a younger brother.
And were you sort of, what was your family dynamic like? Like, was it a kind of...
A bit, Mum was busy a lot, which I think she regrets now. And I'm kind of trying to be mindful in my own parenting.
Yeah.
She always sort of says, oh, I was so busy. I was always out. She had me when she was much younger than I had my kids. So I suppose when she was sort of reaching a prime, this is a thing for women, isn't it? You can have a sort of time of life where it's like your time to really self-realise.
So do you think particularly women of that generation, I got the sense with my mum that it was almost like suddenly I felt around the time, I guess, of the... It would have been the 90s, you know, sort of 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
It was suddenly like, oh my God, I'm suddenly free to do all these things, and it happened a bit late for me.
Yeah, totally. Know? Well, especially because if they had kids, so she was like, you know, very occupied with doing all that for 10 odd years. And then we became a bit more independent, and then she became a bit more independent and, you know, had a whole new lease of life.
And were you... I think sort of class is quite an interesting question, yeah. really. But would you say it was middle class or...?
I suppose in a way, yes, but no, I don't know. Class ties me in knots because often people will assume I am working class because of my accent, I suppose, or something. I don't know, but... My mum and dad are both from very working class backgrounds. Like I said, my mum was a pig farmer's daughter and my dad grew up on a council estate in Northolt. But I certainly didn't. Yeah. And we had a, you know, semi-detached house in West London. But it didn't feel middle class either. I don't quite know.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You kind of always... I think culturally, they became middle class.
Because
we would, you know, we did go to the theatre and have music lessons and my mum was quite politicised and...
Yeah, so and you can't say, my dad's got a night shift down with the old violin making.
No, exactly. It wasn't like he's at the coal face of violin making. But, yeah, so I suppose because my dad ended up with that kind of job, I forget about the dog. This is the problem with having a dog. You get gabbing and you go, oh, shit, where's the dog?
I often ask people this. I asked Ricky Gervais, your colleague, this, about that moment when he saw being funny as a currency.
Yeah.
You know, that he thought, oh, actually... This works, doesn't it? I've got something a little bit different here. Did you ever have that
feeling?
Yeah, I think
so. I think I did. I can remember being the funny one, especially with boys, which actually is funny, isn't it, when you're growing up and going through puberty and all that. I could sort of suss out that if I'll be the funny one then. You be the sexy one, I'll be the funny one. I remember my best mate when I was growing up was very popular with boys and she was very beautiful. And I thought, you be the sexy, pretty one. I'll be the sort of funny hobbit running around in the background. And I didn't mind, actually. I think there was a sort of currency in it. I was like, I'm happy to be the funny one.
Because you're conscious, aren't you, of making adults laugh, especially as a kid, and realising that...
There's nothing lovelier than a kid making adults. And I loved making my parents laugh and my parents' friends laugh.
Did you?
And they took me to comedy as well. I went to see stand-up.
Oh,
as a kid,
they?
Yeah.
Who would they take you to go and see?
I went to see Victoria Wood when I was about 13. And I remember seeing Billy Connolly when I was a teenager as well. Like, they loved comedy.
Did you have a sense that was something within your reach? Or did it seem like other people did that?
No, that's what other people did. But I still loved it. I don't know when the penny dropped that I could have a go. I went down the trad route of acting. So I was like, I want to be an actor.
Right.
But it was always the comedy roles I liked more. I was always, you know, the cocky maid.
Did you have that thing of, did you feel sort of self-conscious about saying, you know, I always think people that grow up in acting families,
yes,
it's almost like it's easier to sort of acknowledge that's a potential ambition.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel, oh God, I don't know if I can admit to this?
No, they were really always really encouraging and up for it. And because I said, like, my mum was through this whole therapy world,
yes.
There's no way she's going to shut down my dreams if she's trying to realise her own. So she was always, go for it. They were always, do what makes you happy.
And were you good? Were you academically good at school? Were you
not exceptionally, but I wasn't dreadful either.
Yeah.
I was sort of, you know, fair to middling. If I worked hard, I could pull it out of the bag.
Yeah.
But I had to work hard, whereas some, you can always see that there are some people that just can do it easily.
Yeah.
And I wasn't one of them. But yeah, if I applied myself, I could do it. I got all my... In the end, I retook some of my GCSEs.
My hair bubble's fallen in the
mouth. Oh, no, don't put that back in your hair.
Oh, where's Molly gone? There she is.
Oh, it's awful, embarrassing when you're shouting her and you don't know where she is and she's at your feet. That's...
I do that with my dog.
All the time, because when they're little and she blends in and I'm like...
Molly, don't eat the puddle.
Oh, she'll definitely eat the puddle. She'll lick the puddle. I'm really happy she didn't roll in the puddle. What do you think of this weird
Molly.
Tail situation? It looks like a paintbrush. Because whoever clipped her has not done the tip of her tail. So
yes,
she's got a paintbrush.
Molly, I would describe her tail as slightly frayed at the end.
Yeah, it's a mess. But I mean, we're not very groomy dog people. Yeah. See what I mean? Like, now she's friendly.
Molly's such a friend.
Yeah.
Now hello.
She's... Hiya.
What's your dog called?
Hetty.
Oh, I like Hetty.
What kind of dog is Hetty?
She's a Labradoodle.
Labradoodle?
Oh.
Oh, Hetty's having a nice long drink. Oh, Molly's...
See what I mean? She's fine now she's off her lead. On her lead, she can be really grumpy. I don't understand the world of dog interaction.
Do you not?
Not really. I mean, people try and explain it to me. The whole bum sniffing thing, I don't get.
don't you?
It's really odd. You?
Well, it's just essentially, it's a more honest form of Tinder, isn't it, really?
Is it?
Yeah, it's just like, I like the look of that. I'm going to see...
But they, it's so arbitrary. They smell everyone.
Well, so do some people on Tinder.
It's swipe left. But dogs smell every bum available. There is no system.
Regardless of gender.
No, they just right swipe the lot.
We're not dogs.
It's such a relief. Although maybe it's a nice life in there.
Look, there's a big pack of them coming in.
Yeah, Molly's not good with these big packs.
Come on, Molly, let's get away from the big pack.
See you.
Bye-bye, nice to meet you. See, how do you feel about that, Kerry?
Dog walking.
Well, just the interaction.
Well, I used to have a routine. I hate alluding to routines. Isn't it terrible when comedians go, well, I've got a routine about that. But I did. And I always felt a bit bad about it because I'd say, oh, God, dog walkers are so boring. I hate talking about dog. But because I'm doing this podcast with you, I couldn't behave like that. So I had to behave myself. And also, again, with my slow down, Kerry, stop being in such a rush, it's always a nice little exchange, isn't it? I went to a party the other day and I ended up talking about dogs for a good half an hour.
Did you?
And I really enjoyed it. And I was like, don't block it, Kel, just let it in. Talk about dogs.
I think it's quite nice just because I quite like the interaction. When I've had periods of stress or depression, I suppose.
Yeah.
I've liked that sense of you need to get out.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's the worst thing not
totally
to stay indoors
you.
In your own head.
And you connect with other people.
And you connect with other people, but it's not intrusive. So a conversation like that.
Yes.
I used to say I felt of the world, but not too intensely involved
Which
in
is perfect when you've got stuff going on. And I think the thing is, I can be very, like, I'll put a podcast on or something when I'm on a walk.
Yeah.
And then you're shutting that down, aren't you?
But
you're closing yourself off
nice
to a chat.
But that's because you're outdoors. And
I know, but what we're talking about is that connection. And
yeah.
If you close yourself off, you're not doing that then, are
I
you?
I just like the slightly odd people I met. Like, I met a beekeeper once, and I just
brilliant.
You know, I don't meet, you don't.
No, absolutely. I saw a man, like, with a squirrel on his shoulder. He was feeding it. I was like, what is this happening? Am I
That's
tripping?
His demon.
Yes, that's his demon. That's what we were saying, wasn't it? My son thinks Molly's his demon because we're watching Dark Materials at the moment.
Oh, that's so
So he's
cute.
Really enjoying. He's 9. So he's in that prime zone for a child to really connect with his dog.
Yeah, well,
and then my daughter, who wanted the damn thing, she doesn't give a toss because she's nearly 13, so she's over it.
Oh, she has, yeah, Molly's.
And
Molly
was her
moment.
Dog. She named her. She asked for her. It was. It's so classic, isn't it?
So tell me, you left school, and you.
I left school and went to college.
You went to college,
and then I went to drama school.
And what did you do at college?
I did A levels, like drama and film studies and English, and then I went to drama school.
Oh look, why have I crossed the bridge? I did that to be difficult.
We'll go up this little
so
circuit.
Brilliant. So you knew you were going to... It was a...
Yeah, I really...
It was drama you
was
wanted
on that
to do.
Path by then, yeah. And I, you know, as well, going back to living in London, when you live in London, it's sort of all there, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's all youth... I used to go to Ealing Young People's Youth Theatre every Sunday in Southall in a big old disused Wicks warehouse.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. And I was really involved in all that. And then there were people at my youth theatre that had been to... the college I then went to, and they raved about it. So I was like, oh, I'll go there, I'll try and
was
go
that
there.
Was that when you went to Rose Bruford?
That's Rose Bruford, yeah. So that's what brought me to South London, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I lived, it's in Sidcup, but it's also, when I was there, it did have a Deptford bit, and I lived in Deptford and...
And were you doing sort of odd jobs to support yourself
as
well?
Oh, always, yeah, you can't...
What sort of things did you do?
Oh, God, what, all the jobs, all the
jobs. Or did you
jobs.
Do just, like, waitressing?
Bar
or...
work, I've done all that, and... I used to help my mum out a lot with all that market research stuff. I've done temping, office, all the officey stuff. I'm not very good at that.
But the reason I ask that is I think your performances, your acting performances, and to a certain degree your comedy, I think it's you're very good at... I'd say it's really naturalistic, your acting, and you're never sort of on or too big. It's very believable. And I don't know, I sometimes think it helps... And I know Ricky Gervais had this as well.
Uh-huh.
And Diane Morgan, see, I'm seeing a thing that you all, who had a sort of life before that world, if you know what I mean,
yeah.
Where you experienced real life.
Yeah.
Which I think helps with observational stuff, but also it gives you more stuff to draw on, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I always did have other jobs, yeah. Even though, like I say, I always did acting as well. I did them in tandem. It wasn't like before or after. They've always just been parallel.
Yeah, to support yourself, basically.
They kind of, yeah, it sort of assimilates into it where it becomes real life.
Yeah.
And what was really interesting after leaving college is you never just walk out of drama school and into acting work. Very few do. So you're always juggling working real life and a bit of acting, and then they start to kind of muddy up a bit. I either did a lot of forum theatre, like you know when they use actors for role play and training and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I did a lot of that when was younger, yeah, and I loved all that. And it would be in schools teaching kids not to bully or get pregnant or do drugs, and I loved doing that kind of drama work. And then you're much more, because they, especially teenagers, they can smell bullshit. So you have to be really on their level and don't spin it or be...
Well, you can't do the sort of...
You can't be legs akimbo. Do you remember legs akimbo?
I was
you
just
You can't be
say,
like that. Oh, like, hey, guys, we're here to teach you about bullying, guys. But you can't, you
there
can't
was a
do
great,
that.
If anyone doesn't know, in an episode of League of Gentlemen, there was
League
a brilliant... Exactly that. There was a sort of theatrical troupe who would go into schools and give educational messages. And one I remember, they were called Legs Akimbo, and it was about someone deciding to come out.
Oh.
And this man was going, yeah, I'm gay. And he was at this club. I mean, it was so awful.
Do you remember the one where one of them had an audition for the bill? He was like, oh, go on then. Go to your bill audition. He was so angry.
But hey, weren't you in the bill?
I've done a bill. I mean, that's a rite of passage, isn't it? I've done a bill, a whole, be a casualty. They're the triptych of acting acquisitions.
Did you start getting work when you left drama school?
I got an agent straight out of college, which wasn't a
God,
given.
That's good.
Oh, there she is. Where's Molly? See, this is what happens. We get talking, we forget we've got a dog.
There she is.
Molly, come on. See, I will go shrill when there's a distance.
Go on.
Molly, come on. Squirrels. She believes that. If you say squirrel, she gets really excited. Have you ever done the panicky call?
Oh, don't.
Molly! Molly! That one.
I thought I lost Ray once, and he's so small. It turned out he was behind a bush. It was awful. It was the most stressful.
My thing is, how am I going to tell the kids? I mean, I probably have that granddad. My granddad is within me. I'm like, oh, well, it'll be all right. Dog's gone. But I wouldn't want to have to tell the kids. They'd be mortified. When we got her and was training her in all that puppy time, which is not much fun.
Yeah.
Ben was doing all that. I was working at the time. I was doing Derek. And he hated it. And he rang me one day and went, I've got to take her back. I can't cope. He'd stood in dog crap in his bare feet. And he was like, I'm not, excuse me, I'm broken, I can't cope. And I said, you can't take her back. Because, no. I mean, imagine the kids.
I always wanted a dog because we never had one. And I had this, obviously, this idea of the Labrador, and it made you normal. And I was never normal.
Yeah.
So, but then I realised no one was normal. So
now you're lumbered with a dog. Yeah. You've had that epiphany and you've got a dog now.
You said that was interesting. You said you'd be more like dog's dead. Do you think, are you like an emotional person?
Oh, very.
Are you?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's emotional, I suppose, but are you a crier?
Oh, God, big time.
Are you?
I cry all the time, especially this time of year.
When did you cry last, do you think?
Yesterday. I went travelling once years ago with a mate of mine, and we were having a chat like 3 months into this big trip around India. And we were talking, you know, when you're like heart to heart. I said, I used to be a bit of a crier, but I said, I feel like I've really grown on this trip and I don't cry as much. And he went, are you kidding? You cried. You cried on the way here. So did I? He said, you cry all the time. Yeah, I'm quite loose with it. Sometimes with the kids, when we're watching a film, I just really push it out. I go full. When we watched Coco, I thought, I'm not going to repress this. I'm just going to... I started keening. And they were like, Mummy, what is wrong with full Alice Cooper mascara. Commit.
But I think that's healthy. I think it's people apologise for crying, don't they? They say, oh, sorry, I do it as well. And I'm getting less apologetic about it, I think. I remember someone said to it, and sometimes people say, why were you crying? Why were you crying?
People overreact to it, don't they?
Do you think
they
so? I think so.
Do you know people who don't cry? Aren't they fascinating? I know a couple of people, men, who...
Fascinating / sociopathic.
Well, and they say, I get a feeling in my neck, but nothing more comes. I'm like, I can't imagine what that's like. It's like having a poo. Oh, God, he's got a mate. Oh, he's got a cagoule. The dog's got a cagoule. It looks like a wetsuit. It looks like some deep sea diving.
You know what? I'm fully on board with that because he hasn't got to wash that dog. Well, he has because look at the state of it. But
I mean, the arse isn't great.
No, and the face and head. But the bits that are sticking out.
Imagine if someone said that about you, I'd be devastated. The arse isn't great and the face and head. I mean, we've just said an awful thing about that dog.
He didn't hear, though, the bloke, because he was in pig farmer mode and he strode off with his wellies.
It looks like a onesie. This dog has basically got a PVC onesie on.
Yeah, it's a bit mad, isn't it?
It looks a little bit...
It's not dignified.
S&M community.
It's a gimp. It's a gimp dog.
And it's on a lead. I mean, it's on a lead in a PVC suit with an exposed backside area.
There'll be feedback, won't there? There will be feedback.
That'll be the dog sex shop. I don't want you going there.
No, Molly, we don't do...
Do
you like this, Kerry?
Get over-involved in all... Do you dress Ray? Does Ray wear little outfits? I'm not on board with that. It's not dignified.
I like that you warned me before I replied.
Yeah, just to let you know.
Just so you know.
By all means, I'm not judging you if you do put your dog in a jumpsuit.
I don't dress him except on Halloween. I put him in a special thing, but
because it's a special occasion.
he looks so miserable.
Yeah, it's
and
not good.
I like his soul to sing openly.
I love that you love your dog's soul to sing openly. I need to do that with Molly. Molly, does your soul sing openly?
I don't think I let her soul sing openly, Emily.
I think it's a log, unless it's a dead rat.
I thought it was a dead rat.
Yeah.
Should we give him a look?
So you think it's all sort of nice and gentrified around Streatham Common, then you go, oh no, dead rat.
Look, do you think it is a dead rat?
No, it's a log.
Oh, okay. See, you're less alarmist than me. That's the pig farmer. So the acting came first, and when you decided...
Well, comedy, I always loved it, but as you said, I wouldn't know how to go about it. It was sort of one of those things other people did. And, there's no college for it, or... You know, there is for acting. There's a legitimate path. You can audition and go, and there's a system.
Yeah.
But with stand-up, there really isn't. It's much more chaotic. I mean, there is a system now, actually, and I did do a course, but much, much later. So I went to drama school and did all that, and I loved it. I had a lovely time, and I did get an agent, and I did get bits of scraps of work, but it was never enough.
You always wanted to do the comedy still?
I just wanted to work more. I reckon, I've always said, if I was a more successful actor, I never would have done stand-up. I just had a lot of time on my hands and I was a bit frustrated, and a friend said there was this course at City Lit. So I'd left college 4 or 5 years by then, and I was doing all that forum stuff and then doing a bit of other work. I used to work in, offices and bars and all kinds of jobs that actors do. And then I went and did this course at City Lit in stand-up, and I really did love it. And even while I was doing it, I kind of thought it was just a dick about. I didn't think I'd actually do it. And then right at the end, when we did our showcase, I thought, well, I've got 5 minutes now. I might as well go and start gigging, and went on the open mic circuit, which is a very strange world.
And were you, people talk about nerves and stuff.
Yeah.
Did you feel sick the first time?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you?
Took a good few years for that to go away, actually. I mean, that I can see why a lot of people, when people say, I don't know how you do it. I think for a long time, I'd kind of feel like quite cocky about it. I'm like, yeah, I do a thing that most people really couldn't or shouldn't or wouldn't. And now I think they're right, you shouldn't. It's mad.
Do you?
I think it's a kind of mental illness. I think stand-up is madness.
Do
because
you?
You put yourself through such anxiety. At the beginning, those first few years, you can't dodge stage fright. You just got to go through it. And it's like, it's physically awful. Mm. It's awful. I mean, you feel like you're on a roller coaster or running across a motorway. It's your body cells doesn't know the difference between high anxiety and sort of chosen anxiety, does it?
Yeah.
Like they say, don't they, if your one level of your consciousness doesn't know a roller coaster isn't a car crash.
Which is why I hate roller coasters.
Do you like roller coasters? Me too, I hate roller coasters. Generally speaking, I don't take needless risks. So stand-up is a completely stupid thing to do. It's a really stupid thing to do to yourself psychologically. But I really loved it, and I could feel that it felt right. And a lot of the feedback was like, oh, if you work hard, there's a meritocracy to stand-up that I really love.
Yeah.
And it's not in acting.
acting so chancy, and stand-up is much less so, and it fits my nature better in that if I work really hard and I build up my material and I go out and gig a lot, I can feel progress.
Yeah.
Whereas with acting, it's just all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can feel progress sometimes now, but for those first few years when I was very hungry and passionate and I had a lot of energy, I was bored. Acting wasn't fulfilling enough. I was just like, these five lines on the bill... are just not going to cut it.
I want to know what your lines on the bill. Do you know my
mum? Would have been something like, stop coming round, dear, he ain't in. Stop coming round, he ain't, I don't, I was with him on Tuesday night. He's got an alibi. That was what I was getting. It was so, every time, all those parts.
What would I be in the bill? I worry.
A nurse, you'd be a nurse.
Oh, I'm pleased with that. I thought I might be a sort of middle-aged woman and my husband was accused of financial crime or something.
Oh, yes, maybe more fraud route.
I'd do this. This is what I'd do, Kerry. I go, I don't know what you're talking about. Roger's not here.
But have you noticed the similarity with both these characterisations we've come up with? It's about the bloke and it's the woman protecting. That's what I mean. These parts are so boring most of the time. Or you go up for like a WPC as they were then. Yeah. Now it's PC, isn't it? But... or a nurse. I did a lot of nurses. I did Holby.
Oh, yeah.
Casualty. All of those bits and pieces. But never big parts. Always like odds and sods.
Yeah, my mum was in the bill. My mum...
Was your mum an actor?
Yeah. And she played... And I always had that thing when I was growing up that people would say, oh, what's she in? Does she know John Travolta?
Yeah.
And it
was always... Did she know John Travolta?
No. But I'd always have to say, oh, she was in... Bill and a Tampax that I had.
Yes.
And because
same.
I grew up thinking
I did bog roll ads.
Yeah, it was know. it's a job like anything else. So if the work comes you do it.
Yeah.
And I think my mum was in the bill. She played a Turkish madame, an owner of a brothel.
Oh, that's fun.
At least she owned the business, Kerry.
Well, that's much more interesting than the parts we're just talking about.
I know,
about.
But she was upset because her agent rang her and he said, you were so over the top, you were terrible.
Oh, that's rotten.
I know. She was, though.
Was she more of a theatrical actress than
Yeah, and she'd
actor?
Done rep, so she would come in.
Oh, well
in.
Then, yeah, she's from that school. And that's all gone now,
and
hasn't
she
it?
Was like, get down, don't matter. And it was like, okay, take it down a bit.
Yeah, but then she should have gone into comedy. She'd have probably thrived. That's
she
the
would've.
Problem is all these kind of... Sometimes you're not quite in the right area of your industry, are you? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be doing this. I should be doing something a little bit different. So that's why I like stand-up, because it opened up this whole world that I really immediately connected with, and I felt like, oh, I found my people.
Yes. And I always have this thing, I call it the look at me gene.
Yeah.
Which I think anyone doing this sort of work...
Is that just an extrovert, or is it something else?
Well, I think it is, but I think some extroverts are happy doing it in the pub with friends, I
suppose.
Yeah,
that's true. And also, there are a lot of performing introverts as well, aren't there? So that doesn't
I think up. What it is that you have a slight excess energy that you need to burn off to stop you being an absolute nightmare in real life.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Because I noticed I'd always avoided doing anything performancey because I came from that world and I was frightened of saying I wanted to do it.
I'll bet, yeah.
And actually... When I started doing the radio show with Frank, I was less of a nightmare to be around because it was almost like I had 3 hours every week.
You got it out of your system.
To get it out of my system.
Yeah, no, I totally relate to that.
Did
I mean,
think
I think,
that?
Same. Before I did stand-up, I think I was a nightmare at parties.
Were you? Why?
Because I'd be doing stand-up. I mean, I'd be disguising it as conversation, but I was trying out ideas and jokes.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I had somewhere to put all that, I was more normal, I think, I hope. Look, this is good, isn't it?
This is
a wood.
This is lovely.
Yeah. There's loads of different zones, aren't there? We've had a rookery zone,
yeah,
and a meadowy zone.
I like this route. And we've got the barking dogs. I mean, acting-wise, you know, it's interesting because you were still known on the circuit and doing well as a comic.
Yeah, they worked in tandem. They were like two separate jobs for a really long time.
And then Derek sort of changed everything.
Derek did change it a bit.
And how did that happen?
I never...
Did you know Ricky?
Very vaguely. I'd come, our paths had crossed. I had a scene in Extras. I'd done a little bit on Extras. And I had a scene in Life's Too Short. And I think I'd auditioned for, like, The Office and Extras for other parts and bits and pieces over the years. So I'd gone on tape and stuff. Plus, I think I gigged with him. I'm sure I did a gig. Robin Ince brought him down to a gig once that I was comparing. So... I think our paths might have crossed in that world as well. And then, he, you know what Ricky's like? He kind of knows about comedians. He follows it. He knows who's
doing stand-up and watches it and engages with it. So I suppose he, I don't know, he knows people and remembers them. And that's, and that, and then I got one of those dream scenarios where I pretty much got pretty the part. Like, I did audition, but the implication was...
You've got it already.
Unless you really fuck it up.
Imagine Nikki's listening to this. What's she talking about?
Well, you see, that's why I'm cautious to say that, because it might not be entirely true. And he and I have never discussed it, so I don't know what the backstory is. I feel like I can't really say, did you? Was there other people? Was Judy Dench up for Hannah? Was Olivia Colman in the mix? So I don't really know. But the way I was made to feel was that he kind of had me in mind and he brought me in and I did an audition and he was like, great.
You must have been so overjoyed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're the kind of dream calls, aren't they? After you've done, like, the stuff we've just talked about.
Yeah.
And I had this other world, this other life that was going... It was trucking along. My stand-up was just trucking along. I was on the circuit. I was making a bit of money out of it. It was sort of, you know, proving to be working out.
Mm.
And then this big acting gig came along. I was starting to get a few more comedy sitcom-y auditions.
Yeah.
Because I suppose people in that comedy world... realise there are these performers that are doing the live circuit but they can act as well, and then you start getting different meetings. I stopped going in for the woman on the estate part and I started going in for like sitcom parts. So it
What's
shifted.
The sitcom part? You've done the woman on the estate. What would your line have been in the sitcom? You would have been...
Were you
the friend or were you the...
Well, heroine? I did Miranda, for example. Oh, yes. And I was just like a funny woman in a shop. Hello, I'm a funny woman in a shop. So now we're moving away from angry woman on estate to funny woman in a shop.
At least you're in the shop now.
I'm in the shop.
You're doing well. So
I'm off the estate and in the shop.
And so, Derek, was that experience with Ricky, did you realise that there was something between you? I mean, not in that sense. You're married and he's with Jane. But, there was a chemistry performance-wise, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I loved doing Derek. I loved... that whole world that he created. It's a really lovely cast, you know, Brett and David and all the people that were living in the home, and it was a really lovely atmosphere and a joy to do it. So it's been a real delight to go on to do Afterlife as well, to get something on the back of... Because when Derek ended, and I knew it would end, I mean, because you know what Ricky's like, things end. He's like,
yeah.
Oftentimes it's two series. You have to get off the carousel and life goes on. But so I knew it would come to an end. And I was sad when it did. And we did do a special, actually. But it was a world I really loved being a part of. And I loved the part. I loved Hannah. Because she was, like we're talking about, she was a working class woman. Look at Molly.
Molly's really going for it.
Yeah, she's happy now.
She's got speed on her.
It was a really good part because she wasn't a characterisation. She was a woman running a care home.
Yeah.
And she had loads of integrity and she was funny. And I just had never had a chance to play a part like that before.
Did you sort of speak to anyone?
Yeah, my mum's friend works in a care home of that kind. And
yeah.
She works with people... she works with people with learning difficulties and she runs a centre in West London. So I did talk to her.
And it was interesting because...
I went to visit an old people's home, actually. I just
did you?
Yeah, I went to visit. Although I've never been a big methody...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Sometimes I go, I don't know what... specifically it will alter about my performance, but I suppose you create a real thing in your head to sort of anchor it to.
And also that there is a sort of house style, I think, which is a kind of seem a million miles away from what I know so far of you, if I'm honest, which is compassionate but a slight, come on, let's get on with this, we've got a lot to get through.
Yeah, that is pretty much, you've summed me up. You've saved me a decade of therapy, Emily. That is exactly what I'm aiming for. Fast-tracked compassion. And then, some of the compassion might fall away from the need for speed.
And then Afterlife, which obviously, this is a series which was a huge success.
I mean, I've never seen anything like it, really. I suppose you're dealing with the ultimate theme, death. You're taking people right up to it. Right up close to it, and the most upsetting consideration, which is losing a loved one.
And you play Lisa,
yeah.
Ricky's I say dead wife. I'm allowed to say that because everyone in my family died. So I'm allowed. I always think I'm allowed to say sort of slightly crass things.
But there is a weird coyness around it, isn't there?
I know.
It is fascinating. And I think that was what made Afterlife such a relief, is that there was no, like, the truth. It's like a sort of weird, well-kept secret that we're all going to die.
Yeah.
It's like this horrible sort of mortality epiphany. And that programme said, no, we are all going to die. And you are at some point going to lose. And we all don't know when. So this is trying to be a celebration of life and grabbing life and being alive and managing grief and all these themes that aren't very often, certainly not in our culture, aren't very often addressed.
Well,
not
I...
really.
Yeah.
Not in that arena. Like, you know, maybe in literature or whatever, but not in the comedy world.
And the mundanity of it and the absurdity of it all in a strange way is what...
Yes.
And did you... Have you? Is that something you've experienced? Have you ever had? I always call it the big five, like the safari when you lose one of the big five.
No, I mean, and it's terrifying. I mean, of course, you
do. You get scared of it?
Yes, absolutely. As my parents are aging now, and I find it, I feel like, you know, of course, I've got into my mid 40s without having to have that, and it's coming for me. I mean, it's coming. It will. It's coming for all of us, isn't it? So it's like, well. I'm lucky to this point. It's not happened yet.
Yeah.
My mum and dad are still around. Ben's parents are still around.
Can I...
I lost a friend.
I want to talk to you about your tour in a minute, but I want to ask about Ben as well. And when you guys met, that's your husband.
Yeah.
He's an actor, isn't
He's
he?
He's an actor.
And when did you... Did you meet at drama school?
Or? We did. I can't believe I'm married sometimes. I find it really sort of bizarrely. I don't believe I've got a dog. I can't quite believe I'm a married person with children. You sort of think there's a sliding doors you with a completely different life.
How old were you when you met him?
Late 20s.
Oh, you did it all really textbook then, late 20s.
See, I can't believe that's true, textbook.
Molly!
She's got some mates now. Should we let her socialise a little
bit?
Yeah,
oh, she really likes those friends.
Yeah, because they're her size.
Yeah, they really
do. Go and play, Molly. Have a social life.
Good girl. See, just a little slight intonation raise. Molly!
That you see, you're right about the pitch. Because
Molly.
When you go high, she comes towards
Look,
you.
Look, she does this. Molly! Molly! Good girl!
Now, you see, now what? She's looking at you like you're mad. That's what I mean, because I don't want to risk doing the funny voice. It's like when you try and entertain a baby and it just blinks at you and you're like, oh, come on! Do you think I'm bad that I don't bring treats out?
Yeah. No, I don't.
Oh, well, I should.
Oh, maybe I'll have got some.
Got treats?
Oh, no. I've only got Snacker Jacks. You can't. They have loads of things you can't give to dogs, don't they now?
That's why I don't bother with it. I'm just like, just feed it.
Look what I've got. Look what I've just found in here.
Oh, there you go. Food bags.
You know, oh no, Molly thought I had a treat. You know what I find really heartbreaking? Look at that face. Is the expectant look when you put your hand in your handbag.
Yeah, you got to live with it all the time. When you eat, she's under the table waiting.
That
and Ben took her to the vet. A lot of people said she's overweight, and he was really sort of defensive about it. And she was. He took her to the vet and got her weighed, and the vet said she's overweight, and he's put her on a diet. She's very much his dog. He's got her on a diet.
He's like Hugh Hefner with Molly. You put on a couple of pounds. Molly. So tell me about when you met Ben. Yeah,
so I did a play with Ben. We did a fringe play in Kennington at the White Bear. And
did you get him by stealth? You know those stealth friendships when...
No, we went in super quick. I went on a... blind date. I was single for a long time and I got quite aggressive about it with friends. Like I blamed her. I'm like, come on, you've got, why is it? This is pre the internet. So I kind of like, look, you know people. Why is this dragging on? In my very, as we've established, slightly boshy nature. So I got a mate to fix me up on a blind date. And he was a nice guy, this bloke, but we didn't really have a spark. But he'd written a play and he said, do you want to be in my fringe play? And I met Ben on that. I
paid his
psychiatric nurse. Do you think that's got some meaning?
And did you think, oh, I like him as soon as you met
him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
lovely.
Who was are you quite sort of confident in those situations?
No, I wasn't for years.
Yeah.
Because as I said, I was the funny hobbity friend. I'd always use humour to diffuse. Like, I was a terrible flirt. You know how some people just are good at flirting? They're like, oh, hi, yeah. You know, all the lines and all the bollocks. I just can't. I've got no patience with it. Like, I'd give boys dead arms. I like you.
and I just had no subtlety, or I couldn't.
Yes, I was always the one who was a bit like, oh, she's such a lot off.
Yes.
That was my
thing.
But they
can't get away from the laugh into the snogging.
I think
how do you go from laughing to snogging? It's just not a natural.
You have to get them drunk.
Oh, God, so much drinking to sort of get
I'd have
dating,
to do that. I'd have to stealth date. I'd have to win them over and then hopefully.
Oh, but that's the long game.
Yeah.
I haven't got time for the long game.
Of course you haven't. Of course you haven't, Kerry.
No, we haven't got time.
But were you?
But I knew as soon as I met Ben that he was a keeper. I went travelling a lot when I was in my 20s on my own.
Were you?
And I just reflected on that I was just going to be on my own a lot. That's
really?
What I thought I'd be. Yeah.
But then it sounds like you were quite proactive when you met Ben.
So you're even about travelling.
Yeah.
Even about, like, well, let's do travelling now. Let's get travelling done.
So who, with you and Ben?
Yes.
Who is the, you know, I think sometimes there's the sort of, you know, there's that yin and yang thing. Where there's,
oh, very much.
There's one person who's the sort of, oh my God, what are we going to do? And someone,
yes.
There's a calm person.
He's
there's
the calm one.
Is he the zen one?
Absolutely. He's much more patient. He's really my balm. He's a rock. And when I was just starting to do comedy when I met him, because we did this play, and that's another world as well with acting, is you're doing all these sort of fringe plays. I used to go to Edinburgh doing plays, but I'd always sneak off and go and see the stand-up. It was the stand-up I loved.
Yeah.
But I was up there doing sort of slightly strange fringe plays in venue 178, which is sort of on the outskirts of Glasgow. Met him in that world, and he
yeah.
was very much in that world, an actor. He doesn't do all that now. But and I was just early gigging, and he came to a gig with me, which is a measure of how much I trusted him. I said, I'm doing this. It's like a sort of dirty secret. So I do this thing where I stand up in rooms and tell secrets. And he came to a gig, and he was really encouraging, and he was like, you've just got to do this. You've got to keep doing this.
How
and,
lovely.
Yeah, and I think that's quite significant, actually.
And then you have, and actually what's nice, it's so nice that you're able to do both now as well. You were on, I saw
yeah.
you at the, well, I at the Absolute Radio, where I do a show with Frank Skinner. And
yes.
Frank, Absolute, do a stand-up to cancer gig every year, and that was quite recently they did that, and you were on the bill there.
Yeah.
And Frank Skinner, who hosted it, introduced you. And he said this woman absolutely stormed it at the Royal Variety performance. And you stormed it that night as well. And I watched you on the Royal Variety performance and I saw Kate and William laughing. I was like, oh, imagine making them laugh. What was that gig like then? Did you enjoy it?
It was quite intimidating. And a lot of people say it's a tough gig because obviously a lot of mates had done it and they were like, oh, brace yourself, it's not an easy gig. Because it's not like playing, you know, the Comedy Store. And it's a variety show, not a comedy show, so they're
yeah.
not necessarily a comedy audience. And you've got to do very clean, sort of broad appeal, you know, you can't do niche stuff, so hence doing stuff about parenting and shopping, which are quite broad themes. So I was a bit nervous about it. I was extremely relieved that it went well.
It really did, didn't it? Did you meet them, by the way?
I did, afterwards. They go round. And then William sort of, as he was nearing me, and I stood next to Luke Evans, just chit-chat. And then he, as he approached me, I was bracing for an awkward small talk, which would be sort of, I assume, inevitable. But he came over and went, Kerry. And I thought, oh, my God, he knows me. But then I realised that it's someone's job to whisper my name. Do you remember that scene in Devil Wears Prada? Where, yeah, exactly that. So this high and low happened in a nano beat, where I was like, oh my God, you remember? You maybe saw me in the bill in the early 90s. And then I realised that, of course, he doesn't know who I am, and he's an extremely professional small talker. That is his job, literally.
Kerry, can I just say, when you played Drug Dealer Mum 1...
I followed your career from the mid to late 90s, and I must say, I've been so happy for the trajectory.
And I'll never... The way you delivered the line, I don't know nothing
Stop
about
coming
it.
Round here, he ain't in.
So and then Kate would have said.
And then Kate moved on.
No, I liked her as the shop woman, the woman who.
Kate didn't. Kate, there was less to do with Kate. I had less to do. Kate knew that the money shot was chatting to the kids.
Oh yeah.
I got a sense that, and you know, the next day it's all her chatting to the little Mary Poppins.
In Alexander McQueen, right. Yeah.
You're not going to get a great shot with just Kate and Kel chewing the cud, chatting about the school gates.
Oh, look at that bird,
magpie. They're on its own, isn't that bad luck or good luck? One
for sorrow, two for
sorrow,
joy.
That's
oh,
bad.
We need a second one.
There he is over there.
Oh, joy. Lovely.
Oh, that resolved quickly, didn't it?
Oh, that's because I'm with you, Kerry, and you're
there
quite... You strike me as quite a sort of upbeat person.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I can have good days and bad days.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I had a little cry yesterday.
When you're doing your stand-up, because you've got... You're touring, actually, next year.
I am, yeah.
So is that all... You know, like some of that material that you were doing at the Royal Variety.
Yeah, some of that's in the
show. Does it evolve as you go?
It does evolve. And then, because I haven't toured for, I think it's 2 or 3 years. So anything that bubbles up during that 2 or 3 years goes in the new.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you've done all your bits. You've done it till you can't say it anymore. And, you know, maybe done the bit of the Montelli as well.
What's this one called then?
This one's called Bosch. So it fits into my whole, what we've talked about. This is me.
And is that why you called it Bosch?
Well, the reason I called it Bosch is because I did Taskmaster and Greg kept saying, here she comes, boshing about, cracking, get it done, get it done. I didn't overthink it.
Yeah.
And it served me well because I won.
Yeah.
So my strategy was quite effective. But so, it doesn't really serve me well in, say, parenting or romance. You can't be boshy in other areas of your life. So I suppose it's sort of trying to kind of unpick that a bit.
Well, you can, because maybe in a sense...
Oh, you can't be romantically boshy. Right, come on, kiss me! Give me a kiss!
You can't. It's just... You said it like that.
I know, but that's what I mean. It's like, come on, slow down. Just...
I don't just know, though, but it sounds... You know what? I quite like it because it sounds like it's quite an authentic way to live, because you're responding to how you feel. And I think... What I like about you in terms of your performances, and really with your comedy as well a lot, is that you're someone who's not frightened of taking up space. And that's something I've really struggled with, and I've only managed to start doing recently. And it's really great, I think, to see women in comedy doing that.
Yeah.
Not doing apologetic comedy, which I don't think yours is, because you are bosh. It's not, you know, sometimes there was a period, particularly when I was growing up, when women would have to be so self-deprecating.
Oh, I certainly agree with that. I mean, I think that the way I came through comedy was I didn't... I would be self-deprecating. But you just don't want to fall into any of the traps of, oh, women talk about this. Oh, women only talk about... Even when you're being a teenager and trying to be funny, I would have to kind of come at it stealthily. You know what I mean? I wouldn't... I was... I know what you're saying about holding the space, but I'd do it in a... I wasn't literally, you know... It's hard to explain, but I wouldn't just come in and be like, look at me,
no.
Listen to me. It would be done in a subtler way because blokes do hold that kind of bancy, especially in the 90s. We were talking about the 90s was so laddie and bancy and all that. You did have to kind of fit around it. If you were going to be a woman with an opinion, you had to kind of tread carefully about how you were going to get that opinion.
Well, that's
over.
The thing. And if you started speaking like them, it was like, oh, I calm down.
Yeah,
like,
you just
excited.
Couldn't bloody win. I mean, it was just...
Well, that's what's interesting, because of the whole panel show thing.
Yeah. I mean, I do them now, but for years I didn't. I was too scared to do them.
Why? Because
of what we're talking about. I didn't want to be... you had to get your elbows out and you've got to be all like, shut up, my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn. And it didn't appeal to me.
Yeah,
it's quite combative. Whereas I feel like now, like you just said, that the climate's slightly different and there's more room for women, and there's not just more room for women, but there's more room for different voices with blokes as well.
I've got another theory about that, though.
Go on.
I think it's because you've got a high status in their eyes as well. And I know that sounds weird, but because you're respected in your field, I think you can go on those shows and hold your own, because you walk into the room and they think, oh, there's Kerry Godleman.
But it takes a long time to get there.
And actually,
that isn't innate. You've got to build that up.
No, and that's what I'm saying, is that I think, as an unknown young male comic going on a panel show, they think, okay. Whereas I think going on without status as a woman is hard.
But it's interesting because I didn't do it when I was younger. I had to wait till I was a bit older to have that status. And it's unfortunate, because when I look back, I think... Oh, I wish I'd had the bottle to do a bit more when I was in my 20s, but I was sort of,
it's interesting that we say, oh, well, now they're letting women on panel shows. I think for me, the format is slightly the issue, which is not really...
Yeah, no, it's changing. That's why Taskmaster's so great.
Which is
because
why
it's a different thing.
And Would I Lie to You, which feels...
Come on, Molly.
A more sort of unisex form of humour.
Yeah.
And it's less... I suppose it's that combative sort of besting and owning each other, which is a different thing. But like I say, I think also possibly having kids and doing
all
that.
Well, certainly when I had kids, it did change even how I was... Because I was fairly established in stand-up, but when I had my daughter, who's nearly 13, I became even more focused in a way, because you don't waste time. You're like, right, I'm here for this amount of time, I'm doing this, and I haven't got any time for any shit.
Bosh.
Yeah, and a bit kind of like, I'm really tired, I've had 4 hours kip, don't fucking backchat me. You really...
Shut up, Ian Hislop, I don't care.
Well, I wouldn't have had the bottle to do panel shows then, but but in terms of the gigs and the circuit and the rooms, the clubs, I did the clubs for a really, probably too long, like I did them really long time, like to the point where I was doing all these lovely telly acting jobs and I was still popping off and doing club weekends, and people were like, why are you still, you're doing a bit too much.
No, it's not.
Like, you're trying
to do 10,000 hours, that's why you're good at it. You know, because you don't realise, but you look back and you don't realise that gig, that one Saturday night, you learned something.
Yeah, exactly. And I do love the circuit because it, like all the things we've talked about, it keeps your feet on the ground.
I want to ask you something. We're coming near to the end of our walk.
Yes.
And I really love this walk, but I always ask, there are a couple of questions I always ask people. One is, have you had therapy?
Well, I did when I was much younger, but I think it was bound up with my mum and all that, what we talked about at the beginning. So she was trained to be a counsellor and encouraged me in my 20s to do that. I haven't had any since I've had kids and been married, but I wouldn't shut it down. Yeah, I would have it again, but I haven't had it for a very long time. All I remember from my therapy was just sitting and I just completely forgot. I did have some other therapy later in my 30s. I just sit and cry for an hour and then you just pay someone and leave. Just literally sit and cry and go, bye.
Go on a panel show if you want to do that.
That's how it felt. It felt sometimes a little bit like, is there any structure to this? Or am I just coming to cry in your house, your lovely house, with your lovely throws and ethnic cushions? Always lovely houses, haven't they got therapists? And meditation bowls.
I don't trust one that doesn't have a lovely house.
Oh, gosh. Well, they can't be a good one, can they? I mean, if they're a good one, they've got a really nice house. My friend told me years ago that she got so angry with her therapist and started saying, look at you in Chiswick. Oh, you don't care. You don't care about me. You're only here because I pay you. It's like, well, yeah, that's how therapy works. When I was growing up, my friend's mum was a therapist and she had clients that she'd had for like 20, 30 years. Now, that's not okay, is it? That's a kind of codependency where it's gone wrong. Because I need to keep buying more cushions, so I need you to be dysfunctional so we can keep the cushions going. So there's some funny areas.
Will you do a show? I want you to write something about a therapist. I can see you.
I tell you why I always got self-conscious about it. It was because of those kind of cliches like Annie Hall and, do you know what I mean? Like all those kind of, you know, that sort of chattering woman that's like, so my therapist said we should break up and all that. And you go, oh, it's just so much more nuanced and complicated than that. But you just don't want to fall into a...
I think you have to, I think it's like anything. I think you have to maintain a healthy level of sort of, I suppose, not cynicism, but I think it's, you have to sort of laugh at it, really.
Totally.
You
know? I think humour is key in all these
Do you know
things.
What I mean? It's like absolutely. When you're doing something, like when I do the dog voice, I like doing it, but I know it's a bit ridiculous.
Everything's a bit ironic. Like I said, even me having a cry can be ironic.
You know, that big one. The other thing I ask people, this is a nice and a nasty one. I ask people, what do you fear most people saying when you leave the room?
Oh,
what do you worry?
I suppose all the, like, she was a bit much and she wouldn't shut up, or a bit opinionated, a bit aggressive. I remember years ago saying to a friend, oh God, wouldn't it be awful to know what people say about you? And she went, well, about you, it'd be a bit gobby. And I went, no, I was hypothesising. I didn't really actually want you to say. And she went, oh, sorry. So I got some insight there.
And
bit,
what do
a bit
you
gobby.
What would you like to think in an ideal world?
Oh, in an ideal, not being ironic way, I'd want them to think that I was empathetic and kind and funny and, you know.
Well, I think...
Salt of the earth.
I think I will definitely say all of those things to my producer.
Really?
Afterwards, yeah.
But a bit gobby as well.
a bit moshy. Kerry, I've loved our walk.
Me too. I've really enjoyed it. I hope I haven't said anything. The thing about podcasting is you relax and you start chatting and then you go, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Or maybe I sounded like a wanker when I said that. I hope not. Will you cut out the bits where I sound like a wanker?
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.